Welcome to Directly Speaking, a direct-to-consumer marketers podcast. Our podcast features marketing leaders in the direct-to-consumer and e-commerce space. We get to learn a bit about their brands and the stories behind them, compare notes on trends and challenges in the industry, learn how they approach their marketing journey, and hopefully we get to know a little bit about them personally. I'm your host, Marcus Lancaster, head of direct-to-consumer strategy at Quad. Today, I'm honored to share with you that our guest is none other than Ajit Sivadasan, president and global head of D2C at Lenovo. Ajit is the founding executive of Lenovo's global online strategy, starting in 2006 across its business-to-consumer and business-to-businesses. Over the past 17 years, he's led a global team that has helped craft and drive Lenovo's global online sales from 5 countries to 35, and Lenovo.com's footprint into 90-plus countries. During this time, revenues and units have both grown over 20 times, and revenue growth and profits over 20 times in the business-to-consumer space. Ajit, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure, Marcus.
In many ways, one of the reasons I'm really happy to have you with us today is that you're an early adopter to the D2C world. You kind of started before D2C was a thing. So would you be kind enough to take me through your inspiration behind that and help us understand Lenovo's D2C journey?
Yeah, so my journey on D2C started, I mean, strictly speaking, D2C, but maybe D2B, probably with my stint at Deloitte when I was a consultant for them in the late 90s, just out of B school. I got a chance to kind of work on e-commerce strategy with a couple of projects. That's where I got a taste for e-commerce. It was just coming up. People were talking about it. It was still pretty disjointed. Systems were not necessarily built for e-commerce. So there was still a lot of people calling on the phone and people were forcefully putting orders in and people were taking orders on the web and then faxing the orders to call centers. So lots of things were not perfect when I started. But then after Deloitte, I went to Gateway and I spent 5 years at Gateway driving various things, marketplaces, SMB, online, mostly e-procurement stuff for B2B companies. So that's where I spent a lot of time really understanding and kind of building a clear understanding of how we build a e-commerce focused business. And the rules were pretty lucid and we were kind of in some ways making things up as we are going. Organizations didn't know much in terms of what this thing was. It was technical for many people, and I was very fortunate that a lot of people believed in what at least I told them. So we had a lot of support. But having said that, I think the big journey obviously was when I got recruited to come to Lenovo, which was roughly 18 years ago, to build a B2C consumer business. And it was maybe $100, $150 million business at the time, 4 countries. We had just started, the acquisition happened. The Lenovo acquisition of the IBM business happened in 2005. And I was hired early 2006. So since then, from 4 countries, we are now in 36 countries. Obviously, the business has grown like I think my bio said 20x or whatever the number is. But it's been a steady growth in trying to focus and trying to get this business. If you can just imagine the environment, right? I mean, we had a fairly US-centric business. All of our people were mostly in the US. And we probably had, 70, 80 people. Trying to find staff in 40 countries, trying to build capabilities, call center capabilities and other things, that's a pretty daunting task as you look back. It's, if you were to ask me to go do that today, I would be like, okay, that's a big task. So, but the process that we went through was pretty deliberate and it was very thoughtful. Obviously, lots of bumps on the road, a business model that wasn't fully tested, and in many cases, a business model that was not that complementary to the business that we were doing. I mean, our entire business is very channel and retail and distributed led. So in some ways, this was introducing a new set of challenges in terms of pricing issues in the market, channel conflict, trying to really figure out how to forecast, and many, many issues that come with the D2C domain. So anyway, that's where it started. And today, you know, here we are. It's become a pretty significant strategic part of our business. We clearly see a significant ability to influence end users. I mean, we are talking about Lenovo.com getting on average 500 million plus visits every year, just the commerce visits. So it's a pretty sizable and meaningful business for us now.
That's fascinating. You mentioned many bumps in the road early, and it sure sounds like many of those were infrastructure related because you were building a business as you went. What were some of the marketing challenges you faced early on?
Well, I mean, the challenges were across the board, not just platform. It was I think the biggest one really was about change management and really getting people to understand how it actually worked. So in the traditional sense, I mean, our business is driven by the geos. So we have four or five geos that basically drive the business, and the financial reporting happens in the country. So what do? We kind of have to manage the complexities in the geography. And that was our big thing. So it was much more about making sure politically and otherwise we are aligned with what we're trying to do. The biggest concern obviously was that, look, our business was so small, but yet we had the ability to disrupt the overall business. If we did the pricing wrong, or if we created a conflict, partners were very sensitive. So that was by far the biggest challenge, to get everybody comfortable with the idea that this is a complementary channel that allows us to connect with a subset of customers that we are likely never going to touch if we didn't pursue a D2C strategy. From a marketing standpoint, the challenge is not that uncommon, and I think that many people will identify this, which is having marketing dollars to basically drive the business. And the marketing dollar conversation is a tricky conversation, because most people think about marketing as a fixed percentage of their sales.
For sure.
And whenever, you know, things get bad, you know, if there is an economic downturn or the business is not doing well, the first thing people do is to cut discretionary spend. And somehow people have this impression that marketing, especially demand generation, A&P, is a discretionary fund. And the reality is that that's not true at all. In fact, for D2C, marketing is the crucial thing. And if you don't have enough marketing dollars in market, you have the issue of not being able to get your reach right. You don't have the ability to convert it right. And more importantly, I think probably the most important thing is you don't have the ability to experiment and understand how people are making decisions and what's actually driving conversion. And, you know, it's, you know, no matter how sophisticated of a marketing mix model you have, the reality is that things are changing every single day. It's very dynamic. And, you know, what worked for us, quite frankly, 6 months ago isn't working today. So we have had to pivot, and we have to find a different mix. We have to find a different way, because the landscape with respect to the generation shifting to more digital and just all businesses becoming more digital, I mean, the entire dynamics of the market is shifting every single day. So in some ways, you know, your ability to actually test things on a regular basis is crucial for you to manage the E2Rs or the efficiency of the spend. So, I mean, so the marketing dollar conversation is an interesting conversation, because people say, look, I've got X number of dollars, and it's a zero-sum game. And my argument is, it shouldn't be a zero-sum game. We should be able to scale to the point of diminishing return any given day. And we should consider unlimited funds as long as you can deliver sales. But the question was about confidence. It's about, do I believe this guy who's coming in saying, I can go spend 10x what you typically spend and deliver at an efficiency and a rate in terms of profit dollars and in terms of top line, that we trust this guy to go deliver? And so that's the kind of credibility that you have to build. And it's credibility on one side. It is a P&L process that's flexible on the other. It's giving confidence to your CFOs that this money will be returned with interest. And then having a team that you can rely on to deliver day in, day out. The other conversation that I keep hearing when we had this was, hey, what you're doing is cannibalizing the business. And the reality is it never cannibalized the business. We never attacked certain segments because of the models that we had in terms of reach. And the models that we had was retail. It was channel driven. And they have a certain sales motion and a go-to-market motion, which is quite different than ours. And so, but, you know, sometimes it's your word against somebody else's word. And only data and track record can prove that what you're saying is true.
It's really cool to hear that because, you know, today, large retailers and digitally native brands talk about how important it is to meet the consumer where they are, where they want to buy, where what you're sharing is that back then you had to prove that there were consumers that weren't going to buy in a retail channel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really, really interesting. I read an article with there where Carlos Savino, one of your VPs had quoted in Modern Retail as talking about one of the big things that led to a huge increase in DTC sales for you was investment in Google's various retail advertising platforms, you know, from shoppable video and other things. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
I can talk in a slightly broader context so that you understand how we think about marketing spend. So we always think about what gives us a better conversion, what gives us reach.
Okay.
So there are vehicles for reach and there's vehicles for conversion. So when we think about things like Google or Meta, or Google or any of the social media platforms, you know, we approach them differently. When it comes to search, as an example, the established norms of conversion, the efficiency of how we buy keywords, what type of keywords, all that is much more well established. I mean, we've had a 20-year 20-year roadmap.
Testing platform, yeah, exactly.
20-year roadmap to really get good at it. And by definition, it's become very predictable. And quite frankly, there is no mystery behind it. And everybody's doing it. So in some ways, it doesn't give you, I think, a competitive differentiation. I mean, there isn't much innovation that you can use. So our posture is, how do we become part of pilots? So Google is great at introducing new products, new concepts. And what we want to do is to be able to jump on those things as early as possible so that we can test it and see if it actually works. Does it improve? So we think about search from a Google standpoint to be much more run rate type of activity from a marketing standpoint.
Got it.
Then, you know, and then we think about similarly, we think about email, we think about affiliates, all of those things as run rate. We understand the economics, we understand the business, and we understand the players. So it's a lot more predictable. What is not predictable is some of the social marketing that's happening. And social marketing, you know, start with TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. All of these platforms have very different behaviors and different efficacy, different reach, different audiences. And so that's where I think there is a lot more testing that's needed. Yeah, it works for some brands. It doesn't work for some brands. It works for certain segments. It doesn't work for certain segments. And so our approach is to say, how do we use social media as a way of getting scale? And how do we think about some of the run rate things as efficiency drivers? And then how do we combine the two so we get an outcome that's, you know, better than 2 + 2 = 4? And we'd like to get to 5 and 6 because that's where you get a competitive differentiation, right? So in many ways, I think it's trying to test these concepts early enough when they are introduced and then having a point of view. And what Carlo was mentioning is really that. It's like, okay, a significant part of the spend goes into predictable things as understandable, right? It's risk-free. So people say, look, I don't want to take any risk. I'll just go invest everything I have. It's like buying mutual funds. But when it comes to established platforms, you really want to take advantage of things that you want to take advantage of innovation that's coming. And Google, many of these platforms, they're very innovative. They're always thinking about how to bring the next thing that's innovative from a customer standpoint. And what we want to do is participate.
Since you're on the new technology line of thought, I guess one question might be, what do you see as being the emerging trends? And what's the next way that somebody's going to engage with Lenovo?
You know, I think that the big shifts are already happening. I mean, so, you know, when we think about big shifts, we think about what is happening with customers. To me, our focus has been much more focused in terms of going after a known entity. So in the past, it was much more, hey, we just do a keyword search and anybody who stumbles on Lenovo is fair bet. Today, the thinking is, look, we've got 7 million, billion people in this world. You can't go after everybody. We don't have the dollars to reach everybody. For each market, what is the addressable audience that we want to go after? Whether that is SMB, students, gamers, you know, creators, whatever the segment is of your focus, right? Depending on the business you're in. And then you say, look, what is the addressable market even within that? And then how do you get very targeted and have a segment, you know, segment-based approach? So from that standpoint, I think personalization has become a lot more impactful. And the technology that is available through some of the players today is a lot more executable to what we want to do. So when you do personalization, it does a couple of things. One, you start identifying with the customer and the audience in a much more real life way. So when you say, look, I want to go after...
I got you. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. When you want to go after, let's say, gamers as an example, you start thinking about an end-to-end ecosystem. And then, you know, you ask the question, what is it that you're missing, you know, from the equation for you to close the conversion? What is it that you as a company need? What does a customer need to be reassured? What does the experience look like when you pick up your phone and you see an ad from Lenovo and then you land on a page or a part of the website? Do you feel like you're being treated like a gamer? Does the promise actually meet reality when you land and when you experience that flow? And I can tell you that it takes years of working to try and get a consistent value proposition laid out the right way so that the customer feels that way. And then it's repeatable. It's not just creating a few pages. It's really re-engineering the process end to end. From your marketing to the pages that they land on, to the web experience, to the phone experience, to the supply chain experience, to the product experience, do you actually have the ability to convince the customer that you are truly committed to that segment? So that takes time. So I think personalization allows you in many ways to make that a reality without having to do a lot of manual processes. So that's one. In terms of other trends, obviously, everybody is talking about AI, so I won't belabor the point. I think there is clearly an opportunity to leverage AI beyond the hype to say, hey, how do we make the experience more meaningful and learn from it? And I think that everybody is doing it. We are clearly no stranger to AI. We have been spending a lot of time trying to figure out how do we make certain things more, you know, whether it's content, whether it's a call center script, whether it's a chat bot, whether it's the data analysis that we do, how do we get better and get more real time in being able to make decisions that allow us to serve our customers better? And then the last one to me is still kind of the promise of AR, VR, and how do we make sure that we are able to leverage the strength of AR, VR to visualize things in a more realistic way. So the big differentiator for a retail experience is you can obviously touch and feel the products and see them in a little bit more color than you would on a 2D, you know, screen. So the question is, what is the future there? And how do we make sure that we are able to leverage the strength of AR, VR to give customers a much more realistic experience as they're going through a browsing experience or a purchase experience?
Fascinating. Thank you. Okay. Another question I had was, obviously you guys are the biggest PC manufacturer in the world, but was brand awareness ever a challenge for you in the D2C space? I asked that question kind of in the context of, you know, most consumers might know what a ThinkPad is, but maybe not all consumers know who Lenovo is. Has that been a problem, and how have you addressed it?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question. And, you know, different people have different points of views. Obviously, I'll give you my point of view. It's not a hard science, and certainly may not even be something that the Lenovo marketing folks agree with, but I'll give you my point of view. So I've always stayed away from this brand awareness conversation, even with my own teams. Because, you know, my teams in many cases would come and say, look, we have a brand awareness problem, and that's why we have a reach problem or we have a conversion problem. And my simple answer to them is, in 2006, nobody knew who Lenovo was. Okay, today we are the world's number one PC player. 25% share, which means one in every four laptops that sold anywhere or any computing device that sold anywhere. I mean, so in some ways, I think that people tend to over-index based on their personal beliefs, whether they have heard of it or not. But the reality is, Lenovo is now a pretty well-known brand. You know, it's spoken, it's the top 50 innovative companies in the world. So it's not like a unknown entity that it was maybe 17, 18 years ago. And the reality is, if you grow the business 20x or 25x, obviously we have overcome some of those challenges. And maybe it's not that important relative to kind of where we are in terms of competition. So a little bit of this is, I think, people's points of view. But the reality, I think, is what customers actually think on the ground.
Got it. All right. Well, I'm going to change gears a little bit then to ask you a little bit about you, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
What do you like most about your job?
You know, the best thing about my job is the ability for me to be an entrepreneur. You know, the D2C business is still a very much a startup type of business. Out of 70 billion, we are still a very small part of the overall business. And we still run the organization on the principles of being fast and nimble. And that comes with its excitement about being able to come every morning and say, I can grow this business, obviously with a lot of help from a lot of my team. But I think the team is also energized because of the fact that we are able to work on something that is, I think, the future. And is exciting because the technology is changing all the time, is complex because it requires equal parts of math and science. And I just love the fact that it's like a puzzle that you're trying to solve, because every day there is something new and something changing. The environment is quite dynamic. And as you increase countries, as you increase the business and the scale, the complexity increases quite a bit. So it's not like you can just take a breather. You kind of have to be paranoid. You have to really think about what's coming. And in some ways, the D2C business is kind of a leading indicator for the overall business. You know, you kind of feel the effects of consumer sentiment, consumer issues, way before it becomes a reality for the entire business. So I take that pretty seriously in terms of saying, hey, do we see trends that's defying what you're seeing in the overall business? So even this downturn, we saw some of these things earlier than the rest of the business. The rest of the business catches up a little bit later because, you know, they're an inventory-driven business. It's a distributor-led business. So there is always a lag, right? So to me, the ability to help the organization really understand what's coming is also exciting.
That's fascinating. Well, you know, because you've been in the role for a long time, and I've been in my role for a long time too. And that's one of the things I like, is that every day is new. Every customer is new. Every problem is new.
That's right.
So how do you segment your day? How, you know, is there, you know, do you approach it the same way every day, or does it change?
Obviously, you know, I've made adjustments through the years, right? So I was maybe the first 10 years at Lenovo, I was very operational. I was in the detail on everything. And then as we started scaling the business and the business started getting bigger, we hired some very strong people from various places. So I have a very, very competent management team. So as that has happened, I felt like I don't need to be in the weeds with the team. And so I've extricated myself out of the weeds, and I try to spend 30, 40% of my time on strategy, just thinking about the future and the kinds of things that we need to do, the adjustments that we need to do. So I let my teams run the day-to-day operations as fast as they can with minimal interference, and try to kind of empower them to do what they need to do. And then I spent a lot of my time thinking about what is it that I should be thinking about for the future. So in doing that, what I've done is I work 3.5 days on the operational stuff, and then a day and a half I spend thinking about the future.
Wow. That's fascinating. And it's great. I love it, because so many marketers that we speak to get absorbed with data and day-to-day decisions, and the ability to step back and reflect is something I admire and, you know, really look. So what brands do you admire, Ajit?
There are too many to list, but I will tell you that in the D2C space, obviously you have to like people like Amazon for the sheer scale of what they do and the type of innovation they drive. I like some of the newer companies like, Wayfair. I definitely like some of the car companies and luxury brands. I like Porsche as an example. I like some of the, garment manufacturers, some of the people who actually sell clothes and shoes. And they have, quite frankly, been the most innovative in terms of leveraging the social platforms like Instagram and others, where they've built a business and it's very seamless. So I don't go to a store these days to buy anything. Typically buy everything online. So I try different things, whether they're shoes or a pair of shorts or slacks. I try buying them online and I see a lot of innovation. So I don't even know if you would know some of the brands like Untuckit and, they are like, Twillery as an example. So for each type of product, I have a brand that I really like. That's where I see a lot of innovation.
Fascinating. And you're right, because really, even since COVID, we have seen the quality of the consumer experience at many direct-to-consumer brands still remains ahead of conventional retail.
Yeah, for sure.
Any books you would like to recommend to our audience?
I'm a big fan of people like Malcolm Gladwell, the guy who wrote Moneyball. His latest book is out, and I'm a big fan of him. Okay. It's called Premonition, which is an interesting book.
Great.
Yeah,
all but right.
Gladwell, all of the books.
Well, what's one thing that you would teach your that you would wish you'd learned 20 years ago that you learn now?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. But I think the one thing that I should have done is really I should have really hired people who really understood D2C, well-established brands early on. But it's a chicken and egg problem, because people want to manage bigger P&Ls, and when you have a small P&L, you can't attract the talent. But I can tell you that if you are going to do D2C, you want to hire experienced hands, people who actually know how to run the business, because it's a lot more easier for you to get somebody who understands it and get out of their way than trying to bring somebody and then teach them all of the things that you know. It takes a long time.
I understand.
So if you're looking to scale the business, right, the best thing to do is to go hire the best person you can find and have them basically just break a bunch of stuff and then set the tone for kind of, the change management piece, which is usually the one that takes the longest.
Well, that's a life lesson that can be applicable to many of our audience. Go out and get the best talent you can earlier rather than later.
Yep, absolutely.
Great. Well, if somebody wants to reach out to you, what's the best way to get in touch?
I think LinkedIn is probably the best one, but ajit@lenovo.com works too. So if somebody has a question, I'm on LinkedIn. I spend a lot of time, well networked. So that's probably the best bet.
Fantastic. Well, I want to just thank you for being so generous with giving us your time today. And I've really enjoyed getting to know you a little bit better.
Marcus, thank you for the opportunity and good luck to you as you go through your new venture.
Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for joining Directly Speaking today. We hope you enjoyed the content and get a chance to get to know Ajit better. And we look forward to having you with us on the next episode. Have a great day, everybody.